I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Stompcast with me, Dr. Alex George. This is the podcast where I go for a walk with a guest to take a little wander into their life. This week, I'm stomping with Sophie Martin, who's better known as the Infertile Midwife on Instagram. Sophie had always dreamed of being a mother. However, at 26 and after trying to conceive for a period of time, she was told she would need IVF if she ever hoped to have a baby. So while she was going through IVF, she was also working as a midwife, helping mothers bring their own babies into the world, which of course must have been an incredible experience, but also really difficult considering the circumstances. Sophie has become a key voice around fertility and baby loss, having tragically lost twins at 21 weeks. She is just an incredible individual, and her bravery and her courage to speak and help others is nothing short of, well, just unbelievable. Her book, The Infertile Midwife, was released in August last year, and I'm sure that many of you will want to have a read afterwards because, well, she's just so inspiring. As a trigger warning, I must obviously say that this conversation does contain, well, themes of baby loss. We're talking about infertility, and I know some of these conversations can be triggering. The reason I'm having this conversation on the Stompcast is because I believe it is important. However, if this conversation isn't right for you at the moment, it is perfectly okay if you just skip this one, have a listen to another episode, or come back at a later time. If you are going to listen to this episode, here are some of the things we're going to be talking about. In part one, what is it like being an infertile midwife? What does that mean? How does baby loss affect the family? In part two, we're going to think about IVF and fertility. What are the key themes? How does it work? Let's explain and explore some of these topics. In part three, we'll have a think about what needs to change in women's healthcare. And also, we're going to do some myth busting. There's certainly a few stories and a few myths that I've heard that need to be broken down, and we're going to do that here today. This is going to be a really powerful conversation. There are going to be parts which can be heavy and hard to listen to, but I'm certain there's going to be some real inspiration and things that everyone can take away. So let's welcome Sophie to the Stompcast. Just before we start, I have a favour to ask, a small favour. Wherever you're listening, please hit follow because it helps us reach more people. Essentially, my dream with this podcast is to get people outside walking, benefiting their body, their mind, and also hopefully imparting information, stories, advice that improves, well, people's lives. So wherever you're listening, hit follow and it'll help us reach more people. The algorithms listen and they share it to more people out there. Thank you. Let's get started. Sophie, welcome to the Stompcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us for a stomp. I was about to say it was, you know, we're starting on a rainy stomp, but actually it's clearing up. It's quite nice, fresh. Spring's coming. What do you think?
Oh, hopefully. I'm desperate for some sunshine.
Yeah, it would be lovely. And I think the winters, it's lovely being cosy and enjoy, like, you know, the idea of going for a roast, maybe in a pub with a fire going is lovely. But then eventually you think, right, I'm ready for some sunshine, to see some kind of blossoming of flowers.
Get that vitamin D up.
Yeah, I think so. Just being outside. I mean, you know, it's a beautiful country. We're very lucky here in the UK. And I guess we're lucky because of those seasons that we get to enjoy things like spring and summer. But it's nice to get the actual spring and summer, I guess.
If we get there, yeah, exactly.
If we get there. And of course, I mean, congratulations. You're pregnant. You said you were about 30 weeks, I think,
yeah,
before we started
recording.
So that'll be a spring-summer baby.
Yeah, late spring.
How has the pregnancy been?
I, despite desperately wanting to be pregnant for many years, find pregnancy very challenging. So it's been, hopefully, fingers crossed, my best pregnancy so far, but not without its challenges. Mm. Baby's quite on the small side, so lots of extra scans and things.
Your story is obviously very powerful, and you know, we feel blessed that you're going to share some of your experience both professionally and personally here on the Stompcast. But how do you find it being, you know, first and foremost a midwife, and also then being a mum or going through pregnancy? Because it's kind of like You know quite a lot. Does that make sense? Sometimes ignorance is a little bit of bliss. How do you find that?
Ignorance is absolutely bliss. Sometimes I think, oh gosh, I just know way too much and I wish I could shut my brain off to all of that. But at the same time, it's really empowering. But one thing that I have found is that it's really difficult to wear your kind of mum hat and your midwife hat at the same time.
Right.
So you can't balance them both. You're either thinking with your, if you've got your mum hat on, you're not thinking with your rational midwife brain.
Right.
And then if you've got your midwife hat on, you're not really thinking kind of in the mum way. So it's, you're either one or the other. It's very hard to do both.
So almost like you can't have two heads. You actually do have to take the hat off
yes.
to let the other one replace
yes.
it. Gosh, how do you decide which hat should be worn? Is that, well, maybe that's the challenge.
Well, I think when, if I'm kind of worrying about myself, you have to put your mum hat on, and then I would go to my midwife and ask her advice, because I know that I wouldn't be able to rationalise everything.
That's interesting. I guess that's where, you know, we talk about in medicine stuff being objective, and like the risk of when you kind of treat yourself or close family members, you kind of lose that.
Oh, you can't do that.
Emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's very difficult though, isn't it? Because you are, it's hard when you're living through something that you do know a lot about. That's easier said than done, perhaps, to separate that.
I mean, I'm definitely on the more anxious side of things. So, like, every time recently we had training and it was about uterine rupture, and I was like, oh my God, that's it, I'm having a uterine rupture. You know, so hard to switch that off sometimes.
And it's difficult as well because, I mean, I remember being, you know, going through med school, every different module we do, I'd be like, right, I've got that illness. Like
yes,
every single yes. module is like, I've got this. And then by the end of medical school, you realise, you're like, ah, there's no point worrying about this anymore because I could have all this stuff.
Yeah.
But you do really focus on it. And when it comes to, because I was actually talking to someone the other day about, I did my second year block, or one of my second year blocks as a doctor in Lewisham Hospital in the maternity unit, working on the labour ward and like assisting and this kind of thing. And it was the most incredible experience, quite a frightening experience in some ways, because unless you've done a lot of training in it, it's very, very new. There's a lot of medicine, I think, that you can go as a doctor in if you've done general medicine, and you can kind of do a bit of everything, you know. But I think obstetrics is, and gynecology is very, very different. It sits very, very differently to a lot of the other specialties. And so you go in as this F2, I was probably like, what was I, like 24 at the time, 25. And I was like, oh my God, I have no idea. What am I doing? I was very lucky that the midwives are amazing.
And I was just like, about to say that.
I just said, oh, listen, help. can you help me? And actually, I was so lucky. And I say this actually when I started my first year as a doctor at King's, and I just said to the nurse, look, I have no idea what I'm doing here. Can you help me out? And actually, when you ask for help, people do generally, thankfully, 90% of the time, they'll go, yeah, no worries, let's do this together. But it was definitely a shock. So yeah, how do you, first of all, just starting from that point of kind of be pregnant, how do you manage that to prevent yourself getting too anxious? If you do get a little bit anxious, how do you manage that? Because of course, we know that actually, for the vast majority of births and pregnancies, they're managed in, you know, the birthing units, they go uncomplicated, a lot of experiences are very good. We often perhaps see, especially in the labour ward, you're seeing the pregnancies that have more complications or the higher risk ones. So yeah, how do you manage that element of risk in your mind and perhaps stop yourself from becoming too worried?
I'm probably guilty of not being able to do that very well at all. But I think within maternity, often kind of your team leads and your managers are really understanding. So if you're really struggling with like the high risk environment because you were really anxious, we're very fortunate that you could go and work somewhere else. So you could go and work on postnatal ward, you could go and work on antenatal ward to kind of reduce your exposure to that. I think when you're totally right though, and I guess it'd be similar for you with A&E, like you're only seeing in some environments the worst case scenario, and so you can just become so overexposed to that you forget what it's like, that actually hundreds of thousands of people are just having completely normal experiences.
Yeah, so it's kind of learning to have an understanding of, yeah, this is the worst case, but trying to keep that balance, but never easy. Now, I might just delve into this fact. I mean, you're known on Instagram as the infertile midwife.
Infertile midwife. Yeah.
Which, and of course, you know, you're pregnant now, so perhaps you could explain a little bit of your background, what does that mean?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
So I set up that Instagram account many years ago when I was first going through infertility, and essentially my husband and I got married, decided we would try for a baby, kind of quite a traditional story, and it didn't happen for us. And so I became just so lonely. I just felt like the only person that had ever been infertile ever, which is obviously not true. But no one was talking about it. I didn't have someone that I could speak to and say, gosh, we're going through this. Is anyone else going through that in real life? And so I found that there was kind of like a community online of other couples who were going through fertility struggles. And so that's kind of how I set it up. But I just found that being a midwife, it was so challenging to be going through it all at the same time. So, you know, having to be exposed to just pregnant people on repeat when you so desperately wanted
wounding. To think of that, actually. Yeah. So you're going through this period where you're trying, or perhaps you're deciding whether you're going to continue to try, but you're also seeing people who are pregnant every single day. Gosh, that must be really tough. I hadn't really thought of it that way.
It was so tough because you want to give your best to your patients and you want to make sure that they're having the best experience possible. And at the same time, that longing for your own baby is so raw. It's really indescribable, that feeling of wanting to have a baby and not being able to have one.
Could you try a little to describe it? I know you're saying it's very difficult too, but for those that perhaps are listening who haven't, maybe they're not at the stage of life or they haven't thought about trying, what does it feel like, to give a bit of context?
I think it feels really physical. So like you literally feel empty, and the infertility is really kind of built into womanhood as well. So there's kind of an expectation that women will be mothers, and obviously many women don't end up being mothers for lots of reasons, but there is kind of that expectation, especially once you've got married. Everyone's like, when are you having a baby? And so I felt like a complete failure in almost every sense of the word. Like, I felt like a failure as a wife. I felt like a failure as a woman, a failure as a daughter. I felt like I couldn't have failed more than I currently was failing. And it completely changed my self-esteem, my sense of self-worth. It affected every single aspect of my life, like my diet, because I was so obsessed. I was just completely obsessed with having a baby. It took over everything.
Do you start questioning, like, what am I doing wrong? Like,
yes.
Do you start looking inwardly
a
lot?
Like, maybe I'm not good enough to be a mum. Maybe there's a reason that I'm not having a baby. Maybe it's because I'm not a good enough person. Maybe I'm a horrible person and this is why. And when I say it back, it sounds a bit ridiculous, but that's exactly how I felt, like, that I was not worthy of being a mother.
It's very sad to hear, to be honest. It's awful to hear when someone's like, you're wanting something, you know, that you're, yeah, and then you're, because this is happening to you, then start thinking, well, is this because of me rather than to me? And that must be so difficult. We had Elizabeth Day on the podcast, and she kind of shared some of her stories. I know that you've connected with Elizabeth and things before, and I think she powerfully put that point that it's so tied into it. And then you start questioning, like, what does it mean to be a woman? And like, what is, you know, where do I stand now with this if I accept that I'm not going to have children and stuff? And I think perhaps in general society, in general conversations, it's not something that people really think about. But it doesn't feel like we talk about this that much openly, apart from, like, you know, people like yourself who bring it to the forefront. It's not something that, like, especially growing up, is that considered?
I think most people think that it's not a choice. It's just something you will do. So there isn't a consideration. Like, I never considered whether I would be a mother or not. I just assumed that I would. And so when you all of a sudden are hit with the facts that actually you might not be a mother, it was like my whole world was turned apart. And similarly to what you were saying, like, I didn't know what my future was going to look like or how I would fit into a world where we didn't have children.
Mm-hmm. And how long ago was it that you were trying and that you were going through these struggles?
I mean, I would say ongoing, but we started trying for a baby in 2017.
2017.
Yeah.
And now if you go to your bio, which I think is so powerful, and first of all, you know, I'm sorry for your loss. You know, the top of your Instagram, it says mother to Cecil and Wilfred who never made it home. Which, when you first read it, I was like, you know, probably had a swallow. I was like, oomph, you feel that. But I think it's so beautifully put, mother to Cecil and Wilfred who never made it home. And, you know, first of all, I'm so sorry for your loss. Why do you feel that you want to put it this way? How do you deal with that? And perhaps if you feel comfortable, a little bit of the story around what's happened, because you can't, you know, any person that reads that, it does hit you in the stomach, but it does it in a way that's almost beautiful. You're kind of like, there's a real memory attached to that. I don't know if I'm explaining that very well.
No, I think that's really nice. So our very first round of IVF, we were really fortunate that I fell pregnant and I was expecting identical twins, which was obviously one of those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, how has this happened to my life? Mm. Like, all of a sudden I couldn't have a baby and now I'm having identical twins. So it was a really special moment. I have such fond memories of that. But sadly, when I was 21 weeks pregnant, I went into spontaneous labour.
What do you mean by, just for people listening, what do you mean by spontaneous labour?
It just happened. So my waters broke, I started having contractions, and obviously shortly after
very early on in the pregnancy, much earlier than we'd expect.
Yeah, so viability is obviously 24 weeks. So pre-viability, you know, legally there's nothing to say that anyone needs to intervene and try and save them. Obviously, statistically, it was unlikely that they were going to live. A lot of hospitals will resuscitate from around 23 weeks, but I was obviously still 2 weeks away from that. So once my twins were born, they sadly died. There was nothing that we could do to help them because they were just too early, which was just so devastating because I felt like I'd gone through such a lot to get them.
I can't even imagine. I mean, the word that comes to mind, I'm just going to share my thought, is that it's cruel. In many ways, you've been through so much, and you know, even what you're saying, that little glimpse of the kind of feelings, the thoughts, the way you're thinking about yourself, like what you must have been going through, going to work as well, to then have that feeling of, I guess, I don't know if the word's elation, but like, oh my gosh, we've got twins. And then for that to happen, it actually makes you often with things of the world, you go like, that's just not fair. It's so cruel. I mean, how do you even begin to respond to that? How do you begin to deal with that kind of thing happening for you, but also for the family? Because I imagine for everyone, this was something joyous and, you know?
When we were going through infertility, we sort of talked about it a little bit, but not loads. But our families knew that we'd had IVF and we were now pregnant. And I think everyone was just so happy for us. And identical twins are really special, aren't they? That's like something that everyone gets excited about and something that was really unexpected. And so everyone was just so happy. And I felt like I disappointed everyone, basically. It was just so devastating.
You actually felt that you...
Yeah.
Oh,
because,
gosh.
And I still feel guilty about it as well, because I feel like I've caused so much upset. Obviously not intentionally, but it's upset so many people. I feel like the ripples were actually so widespread. It really affected so many people. You know, it wasn't just me and James, my husband. It was our parents lost their grandchildren. It was my siblings lost their nephews. You know, and actually it went even wider because... like our whole community felt like it had been affected. And it was so hard to pick ourselves up after that because I just felt so hopeless. You know, although we had been fortunate that IVF had worked first time, which is quite unusual, it takes on average 3 rounds to be successful. So I felt quite lucky, but then it was all just cruelly snatched away. And then I had to pick myself up and go back to work.
Well, it's really sad to hear that you're feeling that you're like taking the guilt or whatever, or you feel somehow responsible, because it's just, I mean, it's something that, again, it's easy for a bystander to go, yeah, well, that's happened to you. But when you're living that life, I guess, you're that person in that life, we're human beings, and it's not as easy to be as clinical and be like, this isn't my fault. You're so complex, and the hormones and things must also, you know, which people often don't consider, that, you know, your body's preparing and going through this journey of pregnancy. Suddenly, you know, you've had this spontaneous delivery, you know, and your body's just like, what's going on? So your mind and your body is just so confused by the shock. It must have been literally, I mean, yeah, unbelievable that, you know, you picked yourself up, really.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think I was just so determined that I wanted to have a family that I didn't see any other option than to keep going. And that was the driving force, really. I needed to have a baby. I wanted my arms to be full. I just felt so empty. So I didn't really see any other option.
After this sad passing, you took a period of time, and then of course now you've got a lovely little two-year-old, and I saw the birthday cake and the candles and things. Talk us through kind of how did you deal with that pregnancy, because I can only imagine that you would have fears and worries given what's happened. And what was that kind of like when you finally got to the moment after everything that's happened? And gosh, here's this beautiful baby.
It was so tough. So it took 6 more rounds of IVF to fall pregnant with Percy after that. So after falling pregnant the first time, I had to go through it 6 more times before it worked. And we had the pandemic in the middle, so IVF clinics closed down for a period of months. I just felt like I was so determined. That was what kind of drove me forwards. So when I did finally fall pregnant with Percy, the anxiety was just unbelievable. I really, really struggled. I would say being pregnant with Percy is possibly the most difficult thing I've ever done, because every single day of that pregnancy, I was anticipating that he was going to die. There was no point. So I kind of was hopeful that once I'd got to viability, things would get a bit better and that I would feel reassured that if I went into labour, you know, things could be done. But actually, I was, I think, so kind of traumatised by everything that had happened that at no point, even the morning that I had Percy, I thought I was going to get to hospital and he would have died. It was so deep-rooted in me to kind of, because my only experience of having a baby had been death, that was what I was expecting again. It was so, so, so tough.
Because it's so much tied in, like, the association between this process and what the outcome was last time. It's so, again, we're human beings. It's not as easy just to go, oh, that's fine. We know we're such complex beings, aren't we? And our experiences form part of who we are. And of course, things like trauma and experiences we've had, they literally have an effect on our tissue, our brain tissue, our body, our minds, absolutely, you know, everything. So when Percy was born, did you feel like, what did that feel like after everything? Like, was there an element of relief? Like, what were your feelings at that time?
I was definitely relieved, because when you're pregnant, you feel like the responsibility is fully yours. And so now the responsibility could be shared, like my husband could help me. But I had quite a difficult birth, which I don't think helped. And I think because I'd been so focused on having a baby, that when I then had Percy, it was so overwhelming. So for quite a few months after he was born, I was still really worried that someone was going to take him away, because I was just expecting the worst all the time. So it was quite bad timing, but there was a story in the news about a couple who'd had the wrong embryo put back. I don't think it was in the UK. And I was so fixated on this story that someone was going to take Percy away because it was the wrong embryo and he wasn't ours. And just silly things like that, where I would just really fixate on whether, and just to clarify for anyone that's listening, I was clearly very unwell when I was pregnant and afterwards, and did not get very good mental health support during that time, because I don't want anyone to think that that sort of thing is normal, because it really isn't. I loved him so much and I loved being a mum, and it was just, he's such a lovely baby and he's still a lovely toddler, but it definitely was more challenging than I thought. As in, he wasn't challenging, I loved looking after him, but just kind of, my brain was a bit more challenging than I'd anticipated.
Well, I think it's a really good point to talk a little bit about the mental health side, because in part two of this, we're going to talk a little bit about like what fertility and infertility really means. What is IVF? How does that work? And in part three, I really want to talk to you about something I know you're very passionate about, which is, you know, what needs to change, and what needs to change in this landscape to improve care, both mentally, physically, mother and baby, and the wider family. So we can talk about that in part three. So I just wonder, yeah, if you could share a little bit of, what do you think about the way that we support mental health around pregnancy, is both for the both parents, really? Because a lot of the time, I think, you brought up this idea of being pregnant, it's like this big joyous thing, and everything's wonderful, and everything's great. But even from my time, you know, that I had in obstetrics, but also my awareness now in the mental health field, it's not always the case. And for a lot of people, it's a really stressful time, induces anxiety, you know, postnatal depression and things. It can be a really tough time. And also, I'd like to mention as well, of course, the effects on the dad as well, because sometimes we forget the, you know, the mental health effects that can have. So I just wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, and what kind of support is there available for people around, you know, around this time of their lives, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, from like a fertility aspect, there's really limited support. So a lot of clinics will provide you a couple of free counselling sessions, like maybe two, which clearly is not sufficient. And then if you're already footing the bill for IVF, which we were, you can't really justify investing in counselling when IVF is so extortionately expensive. So from that point of view, there was very little support available to us. After we'd had our twins, again, I found really, really little support. And I think it's really down to a postcode lottery, because I know that some areas have got some fantastic facilities and support available, but essentially we got nothing, both of us. Because I had my twins pre-24 weeks, I didn't even get maternity leave. So I had to go straight back to work. My hospital was actually really kind and I had 7 weeks off, and actually there was no pressure for me to go back then. That was my choice. But my husband, obviously not entitled to any kind of statutory time off, so straight back to work.
Gosh, it just sounds slightly inhumane, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you know, from an observational point of view, you just listen to it and think, it doesn't sound good, does it? That's really, I know that's a really rubbish way of putting it, but it just doesn't sound very good.
I think, I mean, there are lots of positive changes in the news. There's the NHS recently announced that you can get time off if you've had a loss and things like that.
So
10 days.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So there are changes happening, but obviously it's just slowly. And for men, it's so hard because there's that expectation to kind of be strong for your partner, and you're grieving yourself. And yes, okay, you might not have gone through the physical loss, but actually my husband was kind of physically affected because he found going to the hospital really upsetting from that point onwards. And obviously I worked there, so he would go to the hospital. And when we had Percy, we went to the same hospital. And he was really kind of affected by that. But there was nothing available for him. There are some really great charities. So SANS, we did go to, which is the Stillbirth and Neonatal Death Society. We went to, this is pre-lockdown, we did go to some group, like meet-up things where it's kind of really informal, but you sit and chat with other parents who were going through, and there was quite a lot of men there, and that was really nice to see that, like, people would go, you don't have to go in your couple, and obviously there's all sorts of families that make, you know, family kind of set up. So that was really nice for him, I think, as well. But there is definitely a real lack of support for men, I would say.
There's a lot of expectation on the men just to be like the really tough and stoic person. And, you know, I've got friends with young children and they've not necessarily gone through, you know, baby loss and so on. But even in your kind of like everything goes to plan situations, there's still the kind of like, you need to be tough, basically get on with this a little bit. And I feel like that doesn't perhaps help when you've got situations where already men's mental health, people struggle with stigma and talking. Yeah. And actually often that ends up being counterproductive to the aim of supporting the family, doesn't it, when they're not talking. So perhaps I wonder if you have any advice for any, you know, dads that are listening, or dads-to-be, or, you know, mothers and mothers-to-be, around, you know, male mental health and that period of time. Is there any advice that you can share, basically?
I mean, talking is always such a good place to start. Finding someone that you can speak to, who you can kind of share those feelings with. But in terms of resources, there is definitely a lack of resources for men. And I think, you know, if your partner is pregnant, there can be a lot of pressure for everything to fall into place, and you want to make sure that you're supporting your partner, but also, you know, you're going to be a good dad. And that's tough, isn't it? You know, especially if you haven't got anyone to talk to. I do feel like there is definitely like a lack of signposting, especially within maternity services as well. Like, we don't really have much available for the partner. It is mainly focused on mum, so it's tough for men.
So it's something to think about, and we're going to revisit what needs to perhaps change in the landscape. But it's interesting to think about that perspective as well, because it's probably not talked about that much. I mean, I had one of my best friends, Adam, who's got my goddaughter Cara, and I had him on the podcast just talking about like what it's like to be a new dad, especially if you're a first-time dad, because, like you're saying, they don't come home with a manual, and you have to kind of learn about so much. And if you're not from working in like kind of midwifery or obstetrics, it really is like, oh gosh, like, what do I do here?
You know? I mean, even I was like, what do I do with this thing?
I guess it might be just when it's your own child as well. It's probably like, oh, hang on here, like kind of.
Yes, but it's what we were saying earlier about like losing that objectivity. Yeah. Like, if I was being a midwife to myself, I'd be like, well, of course everything's fine. But when I was being the mum, I was like, is he okay? Is he still breathing? Have I fed him enough? Has he pooed enough today? You know, all of those things that objectively, if you walked in and you like needed to do a postnatal check on someone, you'd be like, yep, that is all going well. But my brain could not see that.
It's kind of reassuring you saying that, actually. But I'm sure a lot of people will feel reassured by that as well. So if you feel that, then it's like, okay, fine, it's normal. So
yeah,
it was be like, what am I doing?
Yeah, you literally, the midwife hat went out the door and I was like, what do I do with this small child that wants to feed every hour?
Yeah, wow, yeah. I mean, it's such a learning curve. Well, listen, we'll come to the end of part one there. Thank you. You've shared so many like powerful things and I'm so grateful for you for sharing. I know for a lot of you listening, a lot of you have heard it's very moving, but it might be triggering as well. So we're going to leave support links in the show notes that you can check out and some of the charities and stuff that we have mentioned in this conversation. But you know, I really hope that you know, hearing these things, it raises awareness, but also knows that if you're going through these things, maybe you're going through IVF, maybe you've had baby loss, that you know, you're not alone. I think that's really important with anything actually in life, but especially mental health and stuff, to know that it's not just you, you know, because it's a very isolating place when you think it's just you experiencing something, isn't it? So, yeah. All right, guys, thank you very much. We'll see you very soon in part two. Take care wherever you are and goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.